with Morning Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Members, I just wanted to let you know, obviously the governor has taken a great interest in this committee and in property taxes overall. Therefore, today, Chair Lopez and I delivered an invitation to the governor to join us at one of our next meetings at his desire, when that meeting would be. And so we are going to try to arrange to have that happen. We dropped off a letter to him, and hopefully we'll have the governor here to present his proposals to our property tax committee.
So this was in the meeting of the House Select Committee. I don't know. It's a panel of group of people that are it's Toby Overdorf is the guy. This is in Tallahassee. And this is the House's tax symposium, colloquium, panel, conclave, whatever you want to call them. What Governor DeSantis keeps calling the 37 people. But they were having a meeting the other day about property taxes and about all of the issues. And, you know, one of the things I particularly appreciated about this is it wasn't much discussion. I was kind of hoping to get a good discussion of sales tax versus the property tax, ad valorem, what's the injustice of property taxes, you know, why should homeowners continually pay more and more in order to keep the thing that they supposedly own already, you know, that basic problem of you have a billion-year lease, but if you don't pay for 3 years, they take it back from you. So it's not really ownership, you know, it's a lease, okay? We all have different kinds of leases, and you know, fee simple is not really ownership. It's a lease if you have property taxes. Anyway, it didn't turn into that, I was hoping. I guess they're just kind of gathering information at this point, which is fine. Amy Baker, who is with the Joint Legislative Office for Economic and Demographic Research, or the J. Lee E. O. Dead, or I don't know. She's the research lady, okay? And she was there to give them information about how property taxes are used in budgets in counties around the state, which means they're being smart about this. Before you go and eliminate a thing that's a major source of revenue for many counties and cities, let's find out what this would mean.
In terms of county revenues, when they're summed together and we're looking at a composite for the whole state, taxes make up about a third of the revenues that they receive. Their second largest source would be charges for services. And then you start dropping back a little bit from there. You get to other sources.
Okay, so no surprise, the primary source of revenue for most of your counties is property taxes. And, you know, I was talking with my wife about this the other day, and I was talking about the ad valorem, and she's like, you know, nobody knows what that means. I'm like, I know. Ad valorem just means based on the value. It means you pay more if the thing's worth more. Your property taxes are based on the value of your home, okay? So we'll say value. And they say things like millage, and millage is such a stupid word because a millage is just a tenth of a percent. I don't know why we use these. I mean, I do know because there's an effort to keep people from really understanding what goes on in the world, or at least it sort of looks like that. Anyway, property taxes are what she's calling ad valorem taxes. They're a significant chunk of the revenue. In fact, so high.
Ad valorem taxes, as a percentage of all of their taxes, ran about 73%. So by far and large, that was the major tax source used by counties across the state of Florida.
Yeah, so what she's saying is that, you know, about a third of all the money that counties use in their budgeting comes from taxes, which can include gas tax, sales tax, right? And then also, out of that, 73% of it is from property tax alone. So a really big chunk of money.
Range in the dependency or reliance on ad valorem taxes across county ranges from 10.47% all the way up to 47.27%.
Of their budget.
So wide variation on how our counties across the state are using ad valorem taxes and how much they're relying on it. Statewide, that share is 24.02%. percent.
Okay, so put this in like numbers that'll make sense to you. Maybe the budget in Escambia County is like $800 million a year. And what she's saying is that all the different counties have a different level of reliance on property taxes for their budget. And again, to apply the numbers there to if it were Escambia County, $800 million budget, anywhere from $80 million to $400 million. Some counties, it'd be $80 million. Some counties, it'd be $400 million. Now, keep in mind that some counties, you know, have a big budget. I mean, ours is fairly big. Walton County, you know, their ad valorem that they generate is about $350 million. Holmes County is $9 million. You know, teeny tiny revenue, okay? We'll come back to that later. But she's saying that one of the problems in wiping out property taxes is it's going to have a completely different impact on every county. And there's no, like, system. There's no big counties it's less or big counties it's more or liberal or Republican or, you know, there's no, it just go all around the state and it's just, you don't know what it's going to be until you look at the particulars of that county. And so one of the problems with wiping out property taxes is how do you replace the money since the value or the significance of that elimination is so different in every different county? I guess I had been assuming, and maybe I'm the only one, but I had been assuming that, you know, kind of most counties were in the 20 to 30% or 40% range and everybody kind of did it the same. No, it's completely different everywhere you go. And then same thing when you look at the cities, because cities are not counties and cities operate differently.
So when we looked at the counties, their number one source was taxes. When we look at the cities, their number one source of revenue is charges for services. And then you move down to taxes as their second source. So they're fundamentally starting to distinguish between what you would see in the counties.
So cities charge you fees for things like sanitation or water or gas or, you know, franchise fees on your cell phone or whatever, okay? And all of these different fees are actually the number one source for, in the aggregate, cities around the state. Meaning that if you take away property taxes as a revenue source, it hurts counties a lot, it hurts cities a little bit less, on average. But there are some cities that do rely more on property taxes, and some cities who don't even collect them at all.
Of those 411 reporting municipality, ad valorem taxes were ranked as the number one source of revenue for 181 individual municipalities. So you can see, as a revenue source, ad valorem is not as dominant in the municipalities as it was for the county.
But still somewhere around a third, complete. I mean, it's a little bit more than a third, completely rely on it. It's their number one source. And what is, remember the counties, the rate of reliance was somewhere between 10 and 40%, okay, is what they use ad valorem taxes for when it's municipalities, when it's cities.
Where we rank those for you so you could compare the greatest reliance and the least reliance. So you range from Bay Lake at 98.3%, which was the most reliant in the state, all the way down to Claremont, which was at 14.2%, which is the least reliant.
Okay, and again, I know this is kind of like, you know, this is a lot of detail, but if we're talking about potentially putting a referendum on the ballot where we would eliminate property taxes, or what's more likely to come, eliminate homestead property taxes, how does that work in real life? What does that mean for cities and counties that depend on that revenue? Every city is different. Every county is different. You're wiping out basically all the income for some cities. You're wiping out half the income for some counties. You're wiping out almost no income for some cities. I mean, so it's a really weird thing to try to take this one revenue stream and eradicate it, basically. And then it got worse because Amy Baker has gone through all the trouble of presenting all of this information. And you know, she's doing a good job of giving them a picture. And then all of a sudden, Anna Eskamani, who's one of my favorite Democrats in the legislature, she started off by praising Amy for doing a really good presentation. And then she asked a question, which is, I think, maybe inadvertently devastating to this woman. I'll tell you why after. But Anna's like, So
just for future data, I don't know if you have this on hand, but I'd love to see a separation between commercial to residential and then homesteaders versus non-homesteaders of revenue generation, so we have a better idea of who's carrying the burden, if you will, of taxation. I think that'd be really interesting to see how that spreads per counties.
I know she didn't mean it to be, like I say, kind of a devastating insult, but the question is not to eliminate all property taxes. DeSantis isn't proposing eliminating all property taxes. He's proposing eliminating the property tax on your house that you live in, not the rental property you own, not the business property you own, just the house you live in, your homestead. And what Anna's saying is, well, it's great to know the 10 to 40% or the 0 to 98% or all these things, but what is it for just the homesteads? Oh, crap. It's like, you know, you ever get done giving a whole presentation to some class, and then somebody asks one question, you're like, I've done the assignment wrong. John, you're an accountant, right? This is...
Oh, yes.
This is all of a sudden, I've been asking the wrong question the whole time.
Exactly.
Dang it.
I feel the pain.
Anyway, and I just, you know, look, I know this is kind of nerd stuff, but this is also, this is understanding your local and your city and your county government, your state government, what this proposal would really mean in the end. And I personally found it utterly fascinating to think about how different even two counties that are right next door to each other, like Walton and Holmes County. Okay, Shane Abbott, they kind of gave him homework. A couple of these people gave him homework to go research. And Shane Abbott, who lives in Fort Walton, he talked about the contrast between these two counties.
I also want you to keep in mind, Walton County is running at one of the lowest mills in the entire state. We're at like 3.6.
Again, a mill is the rate of property tax. Okay, so it's a mill is a tenth of a percent. And so if they're at five, that means 0.5% of the value of your home you have to pay every year. Okay, 0.5%. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
You got a county that's at 3.6 and collecting $366 million, most going to the school. Then I want to move over to Holmes County, directly adjacent to that county. They collected $9 million total. That's at a 9.5 mill rate.
So almost 1% of the home value they're paying every year in tax, and they're only raising $9 million in Holmes County. And in Walton County, it's 3.5%, and they're raising $350 million because it's a much bigger county with much greater value in property, right? Okay, and that's part of the problem, too, is some of your bigger counties, they can handle a hit. Some of your smaller counties, you'll wipe out their entire budget if you do this.
That one county I'm talking about that raised $9 million, they have 11 homesteads that are assessed over $500,000.
Only 11 houses that are above $500,000 in the whole county, in Holmes County. And part of the, one of the earlier conversations that they had been having was maybe we make the homestead exemption $500,000. Like the idea there was to protect all the regular people, you know, because most people live in a house that's worth less than $500,000. And he's saying, yeah, we could do that, but in Holmes County, that's going to leave 9 taxpayers. Or 11, sorry, 11 taxpayers. Because everybody else is going to wipe out their homestead tax entirely, right?
So if we went back on some of the things we were talking about last week, you'd literally have 11 people paying property taxes on homesteads.
For the whole county, which is not a particularly functional option.
If you took away all property taxes for all homesteads, you would take away about 40% of the entire revenue. Whereas the big county, I'm going to lose $60 million of $366 million.
So out of a $9 million budget, they'd lose $4 million, you know? And by the way, just again, to put this in perspective,
I do have another county that collects $9 million and they have four homes over $500,000.
Four. In a different county, not Holmes.
And you take out all homesteads and you're going to take away 45% of their ad valorem revenue.
Yeah, so it's a big deal how this is going to affect these counties. And so she's given the presentation. Shane Abbott's given his commentary, like his information. We're kind of trying to get a perspective on how property taxes affect county budgets. And then Toby Overdorf, again, he's the co-chair of this committee. He jumps in with what I can only describe as the least helpful advice ever.
Additionally, you know, we talked about a lot today about replacing revenue. I would challenge you to rein in revenue instead. and look at ways that you can rein that in and looking at bringing it back. So I think that's going to be a challenge as well, and looking at this and not just looking at replacement.
So now he's telling us, you know what you should do if you're a county that's adversely affected by this? You should just learn to spend less. You should tighten the belt a little bit. I mean, we're going to wipe out 40% of your revenue, but just buy less stuff. Meanwhile, and as just for effect, how big of an impact would it actually have on a place like Holmes County if you cut out their ad valorem, their 45% of their revenue, okay? Think about this for perspective.
There's not a one-size-fits-all as I keep messing with this, because I've got one who's got a low mill but a lot of cash, and I got one with a high mill and no cash. We got hit by a tornado on Saturday, and I am talking with everybody in the state about a new appropriation just for $1.5 million or a $1.5 million cleanup.
Holmes County got hit with a tornado. It's going to cost $1 million, $1.5 million to clean it up. Chump change in Escambia County, no problem. Or Walton, no problem. In Holmes County, they're begging the legislature for an appropriation, because out of a $9 million budget, $1 million, $1.5 million is a big deal. They don't just have that laying around in petty cash, emergency fund, anything. And again, the takeaway from this is not that we can't eliminate or reduce homestead property taxes in the state of Florida, not that we won't eliminate or reduce homestead property tax in the state of Florida, but this is a very complex problem. How do you give, or how do you provide for the revenue stream for these counties if it's not going to come from property taxes? And probably, by the way, the answer is going to look something like, well, raise sales tax. Like, that's historically, that's always the answer. Sales tax has to go up to compensate. Sales tax then goes to the state. Then how do you distribute it to the counties? If you distribute it on a per person amount, you're going to get, it's not going to work. And so, you know, finding that mixture of the formula of keeping all the counties functioning, doing it in a fair way while eliminating this revenue stream. This is, I'm just trying to prepare you for, it's going to be a very complicated problem to solve. John, you've heard all this. You're an accountant. Complicated problem to solve?
Oh, very.
Nowhere close to as simple as you thought.
No, not right. At all.
And that's the takeaway. 527 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Did you hear? A recent stash of $10 gold Liberty coins from the 1800s has been found. These gorgeous gold coins are as bright and shiny as the day they were struck in the late 1800s. And less than 200 of these gold coins are available. Coin experts are calling this gold find an incredible opportunity. Call 1-800-973-9819. And you are guaranteed a $10 gold Liberty coin minted by the U.S. Mint in the 1800s. But with extremely limited availability, you must call now. These gold Liberty coins from the 1800s are still in uncirculated condition. That is history you can hold in your hand. To learn more, call 1-800-973-9819. Call now, and you'll receive a free American Coin Collector's Bonus Package, a $40 value, free with every order. Call 1-800-973-9819 now to secure your $10 Gold Liberty coins dated from the 1800s before they sell out. That's 1-800-973-9819.
Hi, I'm Hunter Rawls, and welcome to Southern Touch Heating and Air. My brother and I started this company with a passion for the business and the customer. We're a family and veteran-owned company that's committed to bringing the essence of genuine Southern hospitality into every aspect of our business. When you call us, you won't have to hide your wallet, because we don't work on commission. I urge you to find out more about our company at SouthernTouchHeatingAndAir.com. And when the time is needed, call us, Southern Touch Heating and Air.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
To infinity and beyond!
Good morning, 529 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. President Trump wrapping up his trip to the Middle East. He's been in the United Arab Emirates, starting at a business roundtable yesterday. He made some deals and investments with U.S. health, aviation, and energy firms. He is set to leave later this morning to head back to the States.
Will there be any more hair dancing? Well, did you see the hair dancing?
I must have missed
the women in the white and the long hair, and they're, you know, hair dancing. They're flailing and shaking and throwing their hair all around.
It is
like
an interesting
a girl
culture.
In a Neutrogena ad or something. It's, you know, it's different. It's not quite as cool as the disorganized, unsynchronized sword dancing.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump is the first U.S. president to visit the Abrahamic House in Abu Dhabi. In the United Arab Emirates, it's the home to a church, mosque, and synagogue in separate structures. A trip for Trump about commerce, not conflict.
Over $600 billion pledged from the Saudis, from the Crown Prince. The Qataris kicking in another $1.2 trillion, and Qataris wanting hundreds of aircraft. And here in the United Arab Emirates, not only are there more than $200 billion in secured investment in the United States, which means jobs back home, but also they're pledging $1.4 trillion over the next decade.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson with the president. Tornadoes tearing through sections of Minnesota and Wisconsin.
A lot of homes were damaged and power could be out for 1 to 2 days.
Fox 6 Milwaukee's Ashley Sears reporting from Juneau, Wisconsin. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we have 75 degrees. It is partly cloudy in Pensacola this morning. Well, Santa Rosa County parents have a new choice for schools. Chris Bryan with this report.
Santa Rosa County parents will have another option this fall. Primer Micro Schools is opening a facility at 3762 Garden View Road in Milton. This is for the upcoming 2025-2026 school year. The micro schools feature mixed age classrooms and individualized instruction for kindergarten through eighth grade students. During year one, the goal is to have up to 25 students in each micro school for a total of 75 students. Chris Bryan, News Radio, 92.3.
Thank you, Chris. Well, we are seeing charges have been filed against a 63-year-old man in relation to that gun scare incident last month at the Pace Athletic Recreation Association complex. Officials say Jerry Lee Land turned himself in at the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office this week. He's charged with disorderly conduct, and he was booked and released on a $1,000 bond. Now, that incident happened April 24th at the complex on Chemukla Highway. The PARA said the man had threatened to shoot an umpire and implied he had a weapon in his vehicle. Nobody was injured, but that incident did cause a scare and a brief evacuation at the complex. A Gulf Breeze man in the hospital after a bear attack yesterday in the Tiger Point area. County officials say it happened in the backyard of a home on Joseph Circle. The victim telling 911 operators he'd been bit in the leg and needed medical help.
My dog was outside, and I heard him yelp, and he was freaked out. He just saw that, and I ran out. Yes, my wife's in Europe. I ran out there to protect him.
How old are you?
And I'm 45 years old. I stood in front of the dog to protect him, and he bit me.
FWC investigating the attack. They're currently looking for that bear, which once they find it, will have to be euthanized. It is the second bear attack in Florida now in just a matter of weeks. The first attack was fatal. That one happened in Central Florida. And this comes as state officials say the bear population is increasing to the point a hunt needs to be organized to get it back under control. Well, a bill to repeal the so-called free kill law is unlikely to get past the governor. Governor Ron DeSantis saying yesterday that he plans to veto the bill meant to overturn the Florida Wrongful Death Act, which would limit who can sue a doctor for medical malpractice. It took effect in 1990. HB 6017 was drafted to repeal the law. It passed the legislature this month. The governor says it would cause insurance premiums to skyrocket if it became law. He also says that he would support a cap on how much plaintiffs can collect in damages to disincentivize Jackpot Justice. It's 534 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast with Brooke Richardson.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Beautiful day today with plenty of sunshine, high near 85 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. Nice, beautiful, sunny weather heading into the weekend. Sunny skies on Saturday, high near 87. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 74. On Sunday, plenty of sunshine with a high near 86. Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 74. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 75 and partly cloudy right now. Our next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Pensacola Beach is a wonderful place to vacation and celebrate with your family. If you thought about having a family celebration or a memorable beach wedding, Casa de Luna still has good dates available this year. Casa de Luna is spacious, with room for large families. It has 9 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Casa de Luna is a large private home with a refreshing pool and water views. And the pool can be heated. Casa de Luna is unique in that the main living area is directly on the ground level. It's very convenient. Bedrooms are both on the ground level and upstairs. One bathroom is handicap friendly, and another as a genuine jacuzzi. There's a large gaming porch with a pool table, hockey, ping pong, and Xbox One. Bicycles are provided. Bring your family to Casa de Luna on Pensacola Beach.
For information, call Casa de Luna at 850-433-4855. That's 850-433-4855.
It's spring at Anderson Subaru, the perfect time to refresh your ride. With 3.9% for 63 months on 2025 Subaru Outback models, or get 3.9% for 48 months on 2025 Forester models and 2025 Crosstrek models. At Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you. Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story in 2025 with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Contact us to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Good morning. Happy Friday. 538 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. And by the way, also AM 1620. I don't say it a lot, but, you know, I know sometimes people have been having trouble with our FM signal recently. That's weather-related stuff. It's complicated to explain, but that's the short version. But the AM signal is just fine, so if you want to switch over to that, or the News Radio Pensacola app, that works really well as well. Or 98.7 HD3 will also take care of you. So that's, you know, any of those sources, you can listen to it. Yesterday I had a chance to talk to Mike Wood, the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. So a lot of stories to get to with you. One thing, you had a couple of incidents of jugging, and that is not a term I had ever heard before, nor is it something that you need to be 18 to watch. but it kind of feels that way as a term. What is jugging and why has it become a concern for PPD?
Well, I got to tell you, when I first heard of it last week, and I've been doing this for 38 years, I thought, you know, where did this term come from? And I even Googled it and came up with nothing, only that it's a term that's used nationwide when a person goes into a financial institution, makes a withdrawal or cashes a check, and then is followed to the next stop, whether it be home or maybe a shopping center or a restaurant. And at that point, the suspects will punch the window in the car and take the money out of the car. So that's what happened twice last week. We don't know if the person was being watched from inside or outside, but we are working on that case. There were several thousand dollars stolen from each individual.
Mm. That's, I mean, it's horrible. I'd just never heard of that before, and it's a very frustrating thing. And it's got a weird name, but you know, that's, I'm glad you're teaching people about it because it's something to be aware of. And you know, short answer here is if you do get cash out of the bank, keep the cash on your person. Don't leave it in your car, right?
Well, yeah, but even more, be aware of your surroundings. Once you leave that financial institution, keep an eye on your rearview mirror. Make sure you're not being followed. Don't take a direct route home. Make a couple of extra turns if you suspect somebody's following you. And if that's the case, get on the phone, call 911. Don't go home. Don't stop. Just keep the dispatcher on the phone, and we will get behind that vehicle and get it stopped as quickly as we can and find out what's going on.
And you can always pull up to the police station, and people don't tend to follow you there.
Yeah.
So there's always a way to solve it. And maybe they will. Maybe we can do everybody a favor, and you can arrest them on the spot. Pace and Cervantes at the convenience store, we had a shooting there. Is that right?
Well, a shot was fired, but nobody was hit. There was a fight. There was one person injured in that fight, but the round did not hit anybody. So we're also working on that one as well.
What? Why? Why were they fighting?
Well, we're working on that, too. We had initial information that one person was going through another person's car. I don't know if that ended up being true or not, but there was an altercation between two people, and one round was fired. We don't know if that was the suspect or a victim, but, again, that one's being worked on.
Okay. All right. And, I mean, there's always a possibility it could have been stand your ground or self-defense or something. I mean, who knows? That's why you got to do the investigation, right? The story that has been a lot in the news, and of course we talked about it a little bit yesterday, the troubles at O'Reilly's. Now, it's being described that there are a couple of issues. One, it's being said that your office has said that the problems are no worse than any other community bar. The other is that you can't enforce a noise ordinance or a noise complaint across a street, like across Creighton. So you're here, you're with me, you represent the department. Tell me what is happening here. What should we know?
Well, that's right. It's there's no more issues up there than there are any other bar in Pensacola. The only difference is this one has homes across the street, and we will respond to that area if there are noise complaints. And we've never had any issues with them not turning down the music, and they've been very cooperative with us. And you know, it's a situation that we hope will fix itself here pretty soon. Now that more people are aware of it, but O'Reilly's hasn't been an issue for us any more than any other bar in town. So, you know, there is noise ordinances, and when there's a complaint, officers will go up there. And on Wednesday nights, we have an officer that works there off duty to make sure things are going well.
I had a question on this. I had thought that the idea, and I may be completely wrong about this, but I had it rumbling around in my brain. I had the idea that like happy hours were illegal, or that some kind of restriction existed where you couldn't, like dollar drink night, that there was something about that was, but I could be completely wrong. That's, I guess, a legal practice, at least in Pensacola.
Yes, it is. I think, I don't know if you're talking about bottle clubs, if you're talking about something like that, which we don't have anymore, but the bar can charge what they want for the drinks. And if they choose to let 18-year-olds in on one particular night, there's a lot of employees at all the bars, the two that I know of that do that are constantly watching for to make sure the IDs are right, to mm-hmm. constantly watch for underage drinking. And there's a lot of people looking out for things like that.
Well, and I mean, you know, look, given the bar landscape in this town, you know, some bars have their specials on Thursday. And, you know, why would you fight? Why don't you go to a different night? I mean, I get why you do it as a business owner. So just a question of, can we accommodate the neighbors and make sure that everybody winds up happy in the end and not killing trees? Creatively. You guys had a call out last night at Bruce Beach that, well, didn't get better, right? What happened here?
Well, we went to assist a male that had fallen on the rocks, the loose rocks there at the water. He fell and had a head injury, and EMS was called. When EMS and officers got there to assist him, he began fighting both of them. Two officers were punched. so was an EMS worker, and the officers had to end up using the taser on this individual to get him to settle down so they could provide care to him and get him off the rock. So, yeah, sometimes your help is not welcome.
He did not have a good night. He fell down at Bruce Beach on the rocks, called for help, needed EMS, and winds up fighting and punching with those folks and getting tased. So, okay. But, you know, how often – I always think about this with EMS, that, you know, those folks are in precarious situations an awful lot. How often do you guys have to help them with stuff like this?
Well, it's often, and what they'll do is they'll respond and they'll hold back per their policy, which is exactly what they should do until we get in there and get the situation calmed down. And we will also remain with them to make sure that they're not injured, and we will also ride in the ambulance if we need to make sure that they're not injured. So they're there to do a job, to provide help. They're not there to be assaulted. So we do that just about on a daily basis to assist them.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when you talk about, you know, scenes of violence of some kind, they have to wait for you, because even though that's time, and time is life, but you know, they're not equipped to handle that, and you guys are. And I just always think that's a slice of that job, as being a EMS responder, that, or fire sometimes as well, same thing, because they respond in lieu of EMS, that, you know, we just don't talk very much about. You guys had a memorial service on Tuesday. I think the sheriff's office is having theirs this morning at 9 a.m. It is, you know, police officer recognition week. I think it might even be day today. But this is something that you do every year to remember the lost, right?
Yeah, we do. And we have good turnout that day. We do this every year. And for those who have been lost in the line of duty, and for their families, the families turn out every year, and have been for a long time, for the officers that we've lost, which is way too many. And we appreciate the recognition. And there was a mural painted at the graffiti bridge for the Pensacola Police Department that we appreciate very much for the individual that did that. So a lot of people showed their appreciation to not only us, but law enforcement's officers across the board this week, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, and that mural was fabulous, with the canine and the canine handler. You know, as soon as you had sent that to all of us in the news, I immediately put that on Facebook. I'm like, people are going to love this, and they sure have. And, you know, who would paint over it? Who would, you know, deface it? Well, you know, people are people. And so, and also some local citizens stepped in to clear it up, to clean it up after that happened, which is great, too. We always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
Yeah, this is more of a did you know, and it has to do with our what we call cruise lights, or steady burn lights on our cruisers. Sometimes you'll see an officer sitting in a parking lot with those on. They're dimmed, and they're not flashing. They're just on, just red and blue lights that are steady burning. And what that is, we use that to make ourselves more visible, and to make sure that people know who we are, where we are. And sometimes you will see us do that while the cruiser is moving. And particularly during bad weather, we had a storm come through on a couple of days ago, and I was on Interstate 110, and there happened to be two other cruisers there that were making sure they were below the speed limit, going at a safe distance or safe speed with their cruise lights on. And the reason I bring this up is one person began to pull over. So you do not have to pull over if an officer gets behind you with a steady burn light on. You do not have to yield or pull over to that vehicle. It's not an emergency mode. It's just letting people know that they're there to slow down, that the road conditions are bad, something like that. So if they want you to pull over, they will flash their lights. They will bump the siren. There's a big difference there. So the cruise lights are just to let you know where we are and to be safe.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know, and I can certainly imagine a lot of people want to err on the side of caution, and if they see the as you call it, steady burn blue, they'll just pull over because, you know, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. But like you say, you don't have to.
Right.
Also, just one additional note. I just want to make sure, I think we might have talked about this, but it's worth mentioning in context. Citizens on their vehicles cannot have lights red and blue. They not only can't have them on, they're not supposed to have them on the car. Is that right?
That's right, especially the blue. And what the biggest violator we see of that are sometimes the trucks with the blue lights underneath, and the Uber and Lyft cars with the logo in blue in the windshield. That is illegal in the state of Florida.
Real okay. The front windshield red, blue, whatever, that's and the blue colored lights under the truck. All of that's illegal.
Yes, you can't have blue lights anywhere. Red lights to the rear only.
Interesting. Okay, I'm learning all kinds of stuff here today. That's fascinating. How often, I mean, what do you do when you've got, I've seen them, so they drive that way, like the Uber and Lyft drivers that have those, those lights on. Do you pull them over and warn them? What do you do?
Yeah, they get warned to turn it off, to go to another color. Some of those are LEDs, and they can switch the colors with the flip of a button. So,
okay.
Well, we have no issue with that. They'll just change the color. But, like every vehicle that we pull over, there's a code in there why we stopped it. And if the warning was issued, we already know that. And if they're stopped again for the same thing, then we have to go beyond the warning, obviously. So most of the time, we don't have to do that, though.
Okay. So green, white, yellow, fine, just not red and blue.
That's correct.
All right. Well, interesting. Again, I love talking to you because I always learn stuff. Mike Wood, he's the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thanks for the time, keeping us safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Absolutely. 5:50 here on News Radio 92.3. If you are thinking about taking care of your lawn better this year, because you know who you are, you know, you're the folks who thought last year, everything's going to be good, and then come summer, you're like, don't look at that. It's so horrid. And then you walk and you see the neighbors who have the great lawns and you're just angry at them for making you look worse, right? Okay. You can be that guy. You can be the one that has a beautiful lawn that people look at and then they're jealous of if you want to. NSEC, they can provide that for you. They'll come out and look at your lawn, look at the soil. They'll do samples and figure out what's the specific treatment for your particular needs in order to get you that lush, beautiful lawn in a couple of months, because it doesn't happen immediately, obviously. 8 annual applications, time program, and targeted to get your lawn what it needs and when it needs it. You can have fungicide. You can have, weed control. Obviously, you'll have fertilizer to help the right things grow and to prevent the wrong things from growing. They also have landscape services. They also, of course, have pest services. It's something that we also know a little bit about here in Florida. Sign up today. Get a $100 discount on your first lawn application with any new annual lawn program. That includes the initial soil sample and lime treatment on an average size yard. Sign up today at NSEC.net.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Good morning, guys. I just want to warn you, traffic is tough out there.
We are here for you to tell you how to keep safe.
Everybody who is listening needs to take cover as soon as they can.
To provide the music, talk, and sports you love. And to deliver the news that matters to you. We are the voices you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress you depend on your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2, right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
But there is something.
Tell me.
You have a brain cloud.
Never hear that you have a brain cloud without picturing the hand motion of holding your palm like vertical and running it over the skull from front to back, like showing you that there's a big cloud dividing the hemispheres of your brain together. And Tom Hanks is like, oh, sure, okay, time to end my life. Joe versus the Volcano. Such a great movie. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, the impact of tariffs is going to be noticed at Walmart. CEO Doug McMillon says the retail giant is raising prices, but they say they're going to do their best to keep them as low as possible, and that will be seen on the shelves later this month.
Yeah, but I saw one of the stories that said the price of bananas is likely to increase from 50 cents a pound. And I'm thinking like to $1.50 to $2 to, you know, $1.20 to 54 cents a pound.
No! Look, my family's banana crazy. This can't happen.
And I'm thinking, oh, the pinch, the pinch. I'm sure some things will be worse, but you know, it. Look, it's a 10% tariff, right? So, 50 cents to 54 is almost 10%. And you know, you think, you know. Anyway, go on, David.
Right. A new union forming among employees at the Kennedy Center in Washington. Workers at the National Cultural Center in Washington, D.C., making that announcement Thursday after recent layoffs. They're calling their union the Kennedy Center United Arts Workers, and they're a partnership with the UAW. And then I saw this story, Andrew. This is kind of a sad note.
Wait, the UAW, the auto workers, or the UAW, there's an art workers? You said art workers for the Kennedy Center, right?
It says UAW. It doesn't really specify.
I mean, I don't, you know. I don't know. Shared acronyms make strange bedfellows, I guess. So
the UAW auto workers, I mean, they do have weird chapters in all sorts of different industries, too.
And they're big in the arts.
Yes. They love the arts.
I see a lot of auto workers at the ballet. Yeah.
All the time. I saw this kind of a sad note here. A historic plantation home and museum in Louisiana has been damaged by a fire yesterday. Investigators are trying to determine what started this fire. It was at the Nottoway Plantation in White Castle. That's about 70 miles west of New Orleans. The fire reportedly started on the second floor in the bedroom. Firefighters were able to put that first fire out, but it reignited and the roof of that building collapsed. And it was one of the largest antebellum homes in all of the South.
All right. Wow. Interesting. Okay. David, thanks so much for the update. 556 News Radio 92.3. Oh, we're getting... The discussion around this Qatari 747 is so interesting because, you know, the estimation of its value, there seems to be a lot of debate about whether it's actually $400 million. Apparently, a used 747 goes for quite a lot more than that. It'd be the interior gold and linoleum and whatever. But also, there is most of the analytical experts seem to be convinced that this just can't be done. Because the retrofitting of the 747 to make it compatible with what the President of the United States would need is so extensive that they literally think you can't do it. Because, for instance, the defense against electromagnetic spectrum, right? It's supposed to be able to survive a nuclear war, a nuclear blast, an EM pulse, okay? And redoing all of the wiring, like down to the screws kind of retrofitting, it's just... cannot be done. Now, what I don't know, and I kind of wonder in this context is, but how can they do it for the other ones that are being retrofitted? And I don't know the answer to this. I'm just saying that the experts indicate. Also, there's a theory that maybe it cannot be done well enough to defend itself against incoming threats, you know, because Air Force One has robust defensive capabilities, that it would actually need to have a fighter escort constantly whenever it's flying. Because of the ability of the fighters to look out into, you know, with their radar and their surveillance, their capabilities. Not because, you know, it's going to have guns and missiles, but because it can't defend itself. It would not be possible to make it be able to defend itself the way you would if you were building one the right way. So I don't know if that's accurate, but it seems like the analysts are not convinced necessarily, but very suspicious that this jet could not be retrofitted to be a full capability Air Force One. It would need fighter escort, and that it might not even be able to fly internationally as an Air Force One because of the limitations to it. So, interesting little wrinkle is that even doing it might not be possible. James Comey finds some seashells along the shore and puts a photo of it up on Instagram and, oh, look, these are cool. And it says, it spells out 8647 in the sand. And Trump world has lost its mind, thinking that he's calling for the assassination of the president because 86 is to cancel. Okay. 47 is, you know, the president. Apparently, this slogan had been running around anti-Trump circles before. I had never heard of it. Did Comey, the former FBI director, intend for this to be a hint at an assassination? Well, he did take the picture down and wrote, I posted earlier a picture of some shells I saw today on a beach walk, which I assumed were a political message. I didn't realize some folks associate those numbers with violence. It never occurred to me, but I oppose violence of any kind, so I took the post down, and now he's getting a visit from the FBI. And you've basically got Tulsi Gabbard has gone on TV and said that, yeah, he knew. So I think we're in a weird place because the president has had one overt and one attempt on his life that didn't go very well, you know, right? I mean, in terms of the guy never got a shot off, but that's, you can't, I don't think you even take risks in this vicinity with a president who's had 1.5 attempts on his life, right? So, trouble.
Local news every hour.